This is the Glass Ceiling. Glass Ceiling. On Hard Facts. Hard Facts.
Today's Glass Breaker.
Today's Glass Breaker.
This is where we talk to women who are conquering their corners of the world. And today's Glass Breaker is a conqueror in the space of activism, advocacy, the grooming of women for leadership, social change philosophy, and media. She's a visiting research fellow at the Africa Leadership Center, King's College, London. And she's the founder of the African Women's Leadership Initiative and the African Women's Development Fund. She's also the CEO of Above Whispers Media Group. And of course, she is also the First Lady of Ekiti State. My guest is Her Excellency, BC Adeleye Fayemi. Thank you so much for joining us on The Glass Ceiling. Hello?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, now we can. Hi.
Okay, great.
Thank you for joining us on The Glass Ceiling.
Thank you for inviting me, Sandra.
And thank you for breaking the glass ceiling, really, because that's who we bring on this segment of the show.
Oh, thank you.
What was your vision when you created African Women's Leadership Initiative?
Well, it's the African Women's Leadership Institute, and it was a program of an organization I was working with at the time, based in London, an African Women's International Development Organization called Akinamama wa Africa. It's a Swahili phrase. It means solidarity among African women. And what we were doing at Akinamama was providing support for African women who were based in the UK and in other parts of Europe, advocacy programs, as well as frontline services in the community. So we decided to establish an African Women's Leadership Institute in 1996 with the regional office based in Kampala, Uganda. And the vision behind that was we wanted to be able to provide a platform for young African women between the ages of 25 and 40 at the time. I was young then. I was in my early 30s when we started the African Women's Leadership Institute. And we had just finished the Beijing conference in 1995. We had all gone to Beijing. We had all seen what it would take to implement the Beijing platform for action. So we felt that as young African women, whether we were based on the continent or in the diaspora, we needed to have the networks, the skills and the capacities to be able to basically pull our weight as young women. And we knew that we couldn't do it on our own. We would need the support of older African women. So intergenerational organizing was very important to us. So we came together to provide this platform to enable us, provide training and capacity building and information sharing across the continent. And over the past 25 years or so, since we established the African Women's Leadership Institute, over 6,000 women have gone through the institute. And some of those women are in key decision-making positions today. One of them is actually the vice president of the Gambia. Madame Misatu Touré is an alumnus of the African Women's Leadership Institute. We also have ministers. We have top government functionaries. We have heads of international agencies, as well as many of our alumni who run their own organizations locally. So it's been one of the most successful women's empowerment initiatives I have had the pleasure and the opportunity to have been a part of conceptualizing.
How does it work? How does the AWLI work?
As I said, it's a training institute. So every when we started, what we would do is every year we would bring 25 to 30 women together from different African countries to Kampala, Uganda for an intensive training program. And we had a faculty drawn from different parts of the continent, women who had a lot of experience in a range of issues on gender mainstream issues, feminist advocacy issues, political organizing, communications, and so on. And when the participants go back to their countries, it is expected that they apply some of the skills they have learned to the work that they were doing at the time or go and establish new initiatives. Right. So some did exactly that. Some continued to work in their existing organizations, applying their leadership skills and growing, with the knowledge they had. And some decided to just set up something that they felt was missing in their community. Hmm. And an example is Josephine Chukwuma Effa, who a lot of people know in Lagos, who runs Project Alert. Mm-hmm. She was one of the first to pass through the Leadership Institute in 1997 in Uganda, yes. Oh. And it was after she left the Leadership Institute that she decided to pursue the idea of starting Project Alert as the only organization at the time providing a range of services for survivors of gender-based violence in Nigeria.
Right.
And today, Josephine has done absolutely fantastic work in the country. And there are many others like that.
Hmm. If you just
so the idea was a training of trainers model. Mm-hmm. People were expected to go back, share the skills, and build on it to ensure that the chain is not broken.
Hmm. Lagos, if you just tuned in, you're listening to Hard Facts on 99.3 Nigeria Info. It's a Wednesday, so we're bringing you the glass ceiling. For today, though, we have a glass breaker. She is, amongst many things, the First Lady of Ekiti State, Her Excellency Bisi Adeleye Fayemi. And she just spoke to us about African Women's Leadership Institute, and she's talked to us about how it works. Before we go deeper into AWLI, though, because I want to talk about it some more, let's talk about the fact that your vision was for the entire Africa right from the onset. Same with the AWDF. It's noteworthy because a lot of organizations or individuals who are trying to address these issues tend to start with a vision for their country or maybe their region. So I'm curious what led you to be Pan-Africanist, if you will, right from the get-go.
Okay, thank you for that, Sandra. You see, that is why I started out by explaining how the African Women's Leadership Institute came to be.
Right.
It was a project of a Pan-African organization,
right,
Akinamamawa Africa.
Right.
The women in Akinamamawa Africa were women from different parts of the African continent, based in the UK, from Uganda, Kenya, South Africa, Namibia, Nigeria. And they were in the UK with different identities. Some were students, some were spouses of students, some were refugees, some were asylum seekers. And almost all of them had strong ties to political and social justice movements on the African continent.
Mm-hmm.
And so with that history, with that background, when we decided to start working on the African continent, it made sense that it would be Pan-African, that we would draw on our members who were from different parts of the continent and who wanted to keep staying engaged with different social justice and political movements that they had been involved with back home. Now, the African Women's Leadership Institute, as I said, therefore involved women from different parts of the continent.
Right.
The African Women's Development Fund grew out of the Leadership Institute because, you know, you asked me how the Leadership Institute works, and I told you people will go back and try to do things in communities.
That's right.
The issue of resources kept coming up. And so we felt the need to establish an entity that would provide resources to African women who wanted to develop their own initiatives, their own ideas.
Right.
And so at some point, because I've been with Akinamama for over 10 years, and I felt I needed a new challenge. I needed to change. And I've always been pretty good at mobilizing resources.
Right.
So I teamed up with two other African women, Dr. Hilda Tadria, who is from Uganda, and Joanna Foster, who sadly passed away a few years ago from Ghana. And the three of us established the African Women's Development Fund. And the core goal of the African Women's Development Fund was to provide financial resources. It was the first Pan-African grant-making foundation for African women's organizations.
Mm-hmm.
So our goal was to provide resources to women's rights organizations across the continent.
Tell me some of the most successful projects the AWDF has helped fund.
Sandra, that's a tough one because HWDF has funded well over 2,500 women's organizations.
Okay, so tell me some of your favorites. Tell me some of your favorites.
So,
then.
But I'll tell you some of my favorites. I stepped down. I'm still on the board of the African Women's Development Fund, and I stepped down as CEO in the year 2010 when I moved back to Nigeria, when my husband became governor of Ekiti State. But I can tell you, some of my favorite projects include starting from the work we did with women's organizations around gender-based violence in different parts of Africa. We have been funding a rape crisis center in Cape Town, South Africa, for many years now. We've also funded programs for the Women's Specialist Hospital in Nairobi. That was the first time I've come in contact with a hospital dedicated solely to addressing women's issues, specifically gender-based violence. And now we know of such you know, facilities to be sexual assault referral centers as well. So, and then we also funded Sophie's Place here in Nigeria. We helped Project Alert Nigeria acquire their own building. And there's this women's rights organization in Sierra Leone that I've been working for a long time on women's political participation, the 50-50 movement. We funded a building for them as well. And we funded the first refuge for women living with HIV/AIDS in Ghana. There are so many I could name, but those are some that I'm particularly proud, of. And we also, we've also funded over the years quite a number of women's organizations across the continent who are engaged in advocacy with the African Union and the United Nations. So we funded them for them to be able to engage in advocacy at those levels, attend international meetings, and do a lot of peer learning.
Now, you've led various campaigns to enact laws that create a better environment for the protection of rights and the promotion of equal opportunity. What are some of the biggest challenges when it comes to getting buy-in from lawmakers, from other stakeholders? And I'm also curious, in your successful experience, how can these obstacles be overcome?
Thank you, Sandra. Well, here in Ekiti State, well, I'm very grateful to have had the opportunity of being able to successfully work on four bills that have been passed into law. We have the Gender-Based Violence Prohibition Law, which was passed in 2011.
Right.
And we revised it in 2019 so that we could also domesticate the Violence Against Persons Prohibition Act, known as the VAP Act. Then I also worked on the Gender and Equal Opportunities Law in 2013. A HIV Anti-Stigma Law in 2014. And last year, we passed a Treatment, Care and Protection Law for Sexually Abused Minors. My experience has been that because we live in deeply patriarchal societies, there would always be resistance. So you always have to start by identifying those who will be willing to listen. There are hardliners who don't want to know. So you start with those who you think you can have a conversation with. And once they have the information, once they have the data that you are providing and the lived experiences of those who are at the receiving end or the issues they are trying to address, the survivors of gender-based violence, whether it's rape or domestic violence and so on, then people understand that it really is a problem that needs to be fixed. And also I've learned that framing is also important as well, because you cannot try to correct a wrong in a community by labeling people in the community as bad or evil or devilish or, you know, backward. You frame the issue as something that should be a win-win for everyone. And so once we're able to get over all those issues and build as much goodwill as possible amongst various stakeholders, the assembly, the State House of Assembly members, and the women in the community, religious leaders, traditional leaders, and so on, it became a whole lot easier. And my experience of working on these legislations at state level has been really affirming. And the fact that we've got the laws passed in the first place shows you that, you know, the efforts paid off. It is my experience working at a national level trying to get the Gender and Equal Opportunities Bill passed with some other sisters. That has been quite difficult. And again, you know, the issue is, you know, patriarchal norms and values. And, you know, the default of a lot of people always trying to use culture, tradition and religion to you know, keep women in their place and deny them a voice and agency. But we shouldn't be deterred. The struggle continues. I found out that sharing information, you know, building consensus, ensuring that, you know, you are able to build a coalition of other interested parties with civil society and, you know, everyone else, it really helps.
I'm curious what you think should be in place, what structures you think should be in place to put pressure for proper implementation. So I'm thinking about things like, so let's talk about your vantage point as chair of the management committee for the implementation of the Ekiti gender-based violence law, right? What should women's groups be mindful of if they want laws to be more than just pieces of paper? Because you said something that struck. You said framing is important, right? So one could say that that's one aspect. But what structures should they have in place to apply pressure for proper implementation?
Okay, yes. Well, from my experience, I found that, first of all, every law that is passed, and we can take the gender-based violence law as an example, has to have what we refer to as a coordinating mechanism for implementation. The law that establishes the gender-based, the law that was passed, the GBV law of Ekiti of 2019, makes provision for a gender-based violence management committee.
Right.
Which is the implementing body for the law.
Right.
This implementing body is made up of statutory agencies as well as civil society organizations.
Right.
And the governor appoints a chair to lead you know, the management committee.
Right.
In our own case, because of the work I put into it and the passion I have, and my track record, I was asked to chair the committee.
Okay.
So asking a senior person to lead the process is an indication of political will. Everything starts from political will, and it can fail due to a lack of political will. So the most important structure you need, if you want to use that word, is political will. Following on from that, you need the entity to be able to function properly. And so the GBV management committee that we have in Ekiti State is structured in such a way as to enable us to address the different issues that can make implementation effective. So for example, we have a working group on access to justice. And people like the Attorney General, he chairs that subgroup. So you have that, the Attorney General, NAPTIP, and the Human Rights Commission, FIDA, and so on. They are members of the Access to Justice Working Group. Then we have another group that looks at treatment, care, and protection, because they have to be able to provide that for GBV survivors. And so the Minister of Women Affairs is a part of it, leads that, as well as Ministry of Health. Then we have education and reorientation. We also have media and communications. We have community engagement. And then there's monitoring and evaluation. All these different components are key to ensuring that the law can be implemented adequately. But following on from all that, for women's rights organizations to want to play an active role in the implementation of these laws in the state, they need to find out how the GBV committee or whatever the state coordinating mechanism, however it's described in the state, they need to find out how it's constituted. They need to make sure that there's adequate representation of civil society. Here in Ekiti, we have civil society organizations as well as specific women's rights organizations like FIDA, for example, and the Association of Women Journalists. They are on the committee as well as a couple of others. So we also have other specific products to enable us to do our work effectively, like a sexual assault referral center. We have a shelter in the state. We have a GBV fund that enables us to rehabilitate survivors. And generally, we have a really good relationship, as I said earlier, with different stakeholders in the community. Because without community engagement and involvement, all this work is not going to be possible.
Fair.
Communities don't own it.
Fair. If you just joined us, Lagos, we're wrapping up our conversation with our glass breaker on the show today. She is an activist. She is a visiting research fellow at the Africa Leadership Center, King's College London. She is the founder of the African Women's Leadership Institute. She's also the founder of the African Women's Development Fund. She's the CEO of Above Whispers Media Group, and she's also the First Lady of Ekiti State, Her Excellency Bisi Adeleye Fayemi. Before we go, I have to ask you, there are too few women in positions of power and influence in both public and private sector, while there are so many capable and competent women for these roles. So are there strategies that you think women must adopt to get more of our numbers through these doors that have remained shut?
Yes, it's so sad that we have that gap. There are a number of strategies that we need to look at. For me, I believe legal legislation and policy frameworks are absolutely key, because if we keep leaving everything to the discretion of political leaders, then it means that every political season, we will keep begging, the president or governors to appoint women, to give women a ticket and so on. So we need to have legislative and policy frameworks, which include provisions such as affirmative action and quotas that can enable us level the playing field for women. As you said, it doesn't mean that we don't have competent women out there, but because we have so many restrictions or barriers placed in the way of women because of our cultures, our traditions, and the way we interpret religion, it means that women have to work twice, even thrice as hard for them to get things that just come, so naturally to a lot of men who feel that leadership is their right. Leadership is the right of women as well. And it is not fair that women always have all these obstacles placed in their way. It's also important for us to have women championing other women, because at the end of the day, women are at least 50% of the voting populace.
Right.
So if more women are determined to support other women, then both parties will recognize that strength and will be willing to give women tickets for them to win elections. Because in my experience of being advocacy with political parties, one of the questions they will ask you is, if we give a woman the ticket, will she win? Can she win? They want to give the tickets to someone who will
win.
And then I'll ask them, why would they not win? Because half of those who turn out to vote, sometimes even 60% of those who turn out to vote will be women. So if we encourage women to see that it's okay to support other women, that will go a long way. Then of course we have to keep encouraging women to build social and political capital. That's one thing that comes to men are allowed to do naturally, because it's assumed that men are the ones who will be leaders. And right from when men are boys, they are released to go and play football, on the field, and make friends with 20 other kids. And as young girls, we are confined in the kitchen to learn how to make the perfect eba and egusi, when we should be out there making friends.
That's right.
We go through school, we get married, and we change our names. Nobody can trace us. The men don't change their names. And so it's very difficult for women to build social capital. It is that social capital that translates into political capital when you need it.
That's right.
So we are now encouraging women to build their own social and political capital, go to your constituency, however you define your constituency. It could be where you live, it could be where your father comes from, where your husband comes from. But go home, get involved in what is happening, support social programs there, let people know you. And you can decide that you want to run, or you can decide they're going to mentor someone, but women should be politically engaged. Mm. And hopefully that will translate into more numbers for women in decision making.
Your Excellency, thank you so much for joining us on The Glass Ceiling today. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you very much, Sandra. Thank you for inviting me.
Lagos, let's take a break. When we come back, more conversations from GlassCon 2021. Amazing women on our panel. You will hear from them. You will talk to them. And you will talk to me. I am Sandra Ezekwesili. Don't go away.